Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. And today, my very special guest is Dilquaz Ahmed. She is the Executive Director of License to Freedom, an El Cajon-based nonprofit with a mission to promote peaceful and safe relationships in immigrant and refugee communities locally through services that build resilience and self-sufficiency, support healing from trauma and violence, and advocacy for equity and justice. Dilquaz, welcome to the show, and thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much. You know, Miriam, I love you, and I love your magazine. Oh. In the busy, busy day, I could never say no to you.
Well, we really appreciate you coming on. Your agency has been providing counseling to the 9 children of a Syrian refugee family in El Cajon after their father, Abdulhanan Alrawi, was unfortunately arrested, allegedly for shooting and killing their mother while the children were in the home. Our hearts, I think all of us can say that our hearts go out to the children after such a terrible tragedy. You've been counseling them. Can you bring us up to date on how the children are doing, you know, their ages and what's going to happen to them now?
Oh, Miriam, they are going, I don't know how they are going to do. They asked me that question and I told them, I don't know. Let's figure it out because it's so hard. I don't have answer. I don't know. It's difficult.
Are they separated right now or are they together?
No. So this is like, you know, in the situation like that, the community gets together. And we were so fortunate that the Syrian, Iraqi community, even the Somalis community, because the babysitter was Somalis, and they all got together and they say, we get to host the kids. So one of the friends, family friends, they were so close friends from Syria, mm-hmm. he decided to take the kids.
All 9 of them.
And he has 7 kids.
Wow.
And in
That's very heartwarming to hear.
It is. So so the husband and wife, they were best friend. Wife was best friend with the mom. She mm-hmm. shared a lot of beautiful memory. They were going together to ESL class. They were just going shopping. They spent most of the time like eating together, having conversation. It's just heartbroken. They did not sleep.
And the kids range in age from
2 years old until 17. The youngest 2, the oldest 17 years old.
Oh my goodness.
Yesterday, for the first time, we got the key to go to the house and we opened the door for the first time.
How was that?
Oh my goodness. I don't know. My heart, the boy, he just ran to mommy's bedroom. He grabbed her arm wrapped it around.
And that's where she died. She died in the bedroom.
He wrapped it around.
Did they see what happened or were they asleep when this occurred?
Were asleep. Nobody see what happened. Nobody know.
We should put in here that Mr. Alrawi has pleaded not guilty, and the court has prohibited him from seeing his children, although apparently he is allowed to have contact via phone and letters and so forth. Mr. Alrawi's friends, some of them, have voiced shock at what happened. Some of them have said he was a pillar in the community, known for helping other people. You know, they couldn't believe that he could do this. Did you know either of the parents or anyone in this family before this happened, Dilquaz? Or can you tell us anything about them before this?
No, they never. Even when I've been trying to talk to the kids every day to see mm-hmm. if there's any kind of violence, they say never. They say my mom and my dad, they were in love. They kept showing me video of mom.
Oh my God.
The day she got your U.S. citizen, dad went, he bought her a beautiful gold necklace. He was kissing her. Oh. So I told her, what happened that day? They say because they have a small swimming pool. So they say we were all swimming. Mom was making food. Dad was taking video. Everything was good. Like nobody mentioned anything. about any type of violence because we don't know. We don't know. They were not our client. They never contacted
us. Yeah. I mean, I know there were some neighbors who said they heard arguing, and some said this had gone on, you know, for months, but some of the friends said they only lived there for a couple of weeks. So it cast some doubt on how accurate, you know, that is, if at all.
That was so difficult. And the kids were so sad.
They say, first,
this family, they just moved a month ago. Second, they say, we always have friends. Of course, we were swimming. We were yelling.
Yeah.
This is part of the culture. When we talk, we yell. They say, like, they have no right. The kids were so, like, they were so disappointed what the neighbors say, and they were so heartbreaking by their statements.
Yeah, I can only imagine just adding to the pain they're already going through. So how long had this couple or the family been in the United States and El Cajon? And what can you tell us about what you've learned since then about the trauma that they perhaps had been through in war-torn Syria and in their time as refugees?
As other Syrian refugees, those people, they flee war. They were able to survive death and war in Syria to make it safe to United States, you know, to adopt a new culture, a new home, not just a new country home. They had big dreams. All of them. Mom want to go to school to, you know, learn English. Dad want to work. He was working full-time. Kids.
What kind of work did he do?
He was working as a security guard for one of the company. So he was working during night and coming home at 5 a.m.
Yeah.
So they've been here for 6 years. They came 6 years ago. They were in Florida for 3 years. And after that, they moved to San Diego in 2019.
Okay.
So they've been in San Diego for 2 years and a half.
What are, without singling out this family specifically, what are some of the stresses and the pressures that are facing refugee families in our region, especially those with large families? San Diego, of course, is a very expensive place to live, highest housing market in the nation as of a couple of months ago. And what are the main stresses and pressures that you're seeing on them? And what could be done to help reduce some of those pressures that families are under?
In general, refugees right now facing one of the biggest issues, housing. Housing. As you know, most of the Afghan, you know, newcomers, they still on the motel because they have 7, 9 kids. And remember, they all have extended family. They brought their grandma, their grandpa, their dad, their mom, and they don't like to be separated. So it's so difficult to find like 4-bedroom apartment because it's very expensive. Talking about El Cajon, 2-bedroom is $2,600 right now.
Yeah.
El Cajon.
I've wondered sometimes if we need to change the zoning laws or something to allow building of things that would house larger extended families like that so people could stay.
We don't have anybody to lobby for the refugee. We have, but we are not there. We don't have a voice in the city council of El Cajon. And so that's why nobody lobby for the refugee community, for low income, for bringing low income apartment, from bringing affordable housing. We don't have that voice there. Maybe in the future, we have to advocate and work to have our voice to be heard. But right now in the city of El Cajon, in addition, we don't have rental control policy. So people can raise their rent as much as they want.
And the federal government provides only very short-term help for refugees. I was kind of surprised that how little it is, how quickly it runs out. Maybe you can clarify that. But also, is it true that it's basically the same no matter where you go? So if you're settled into an area where housing costs are low, you get the same amount as if they settle you in a place like San Diego, where the housing prices are very high. Should there maybe be some kind of sliding scale there so that to allow for the cost of living in the area that people are placed?
Or maybe provide, at least, that's what I say. Say when refugee arrive, if we can provide them with 1 year, only 1 year, until they settle, they will gain some, you know, knowledge about how the system works.
Yeah, they only get, what is it, a month or 1 month, 2 months?
2-3-4 months. It's not very low. Even very low. So once, if they can be settled for 1 year, later on, they can apply for driver license, they can drive, they can get a car, and you know, they can apply for a job. So we don't have that system. But sometimes people say, why they are coming to San Diego? Refugee people, they feel safer to be around their families and friends. Right. They can go to the place like New Mexico, for example. Mm-hmm. They can rent a house for $500, but they feel lonely. They don't have the mosque, they don't have their church, they don't have their you know, community. They
right,
don't have
access to transit, all those things, yeah.
Unrelated, you know. Here they can practice their identity, they're proud who they are, but I think there is a price for everything. Price of love here, yes.
Yeah, they always say we get part of our income in sunshine in San Diego, exactly. But yes. That doesn't pay the rent. How prevalent, of course, we don't know the circumstances of this yet, whether it was really a homicide or an accident or what happened in this tragic situation. But how prevalent is the problem of domestic violence among refugee communities? Are there cultural differences between some of the places they came from and, you know, the culture here that is a factor that you're addressing with your nonprofit efforts?
I remember, Miriam, domestic violence, it could happen anytime, right. Anywhere. It's cross the limitation of where you are from, you know, educational background, age, religion. It could happen to any time.
Right. It certainly happens here.
So it's happened. Domestic violence in the refugee community, we see a lot of domestic violence, but the same thing that we see it in the mainstream, like, you know, community also, that it is. But I always say was the difference is tool, that the refugee community, they don't have the tool that American people does. Mm-hmm. When they come here, they don't know how the justice system works. You know, they're afraid if they report the incident, because they say, if you do that, you will lose your immigration status, or the CPS will take their kids away from you. So those are the things, the tool is different. Otherwise, domestic violence happens everywhere.
Right. But I mean, there's some places where it's not treated like a serious crime as it's here. So there's that issue also. People need education to learn the differences in the laws here.
You know, prevention program. We need prevention program. What happened is with COVID, we cannot get a lot of people in one place. We used to have a community dialogue for change. It's been running for years. We used to work with the newcomers, addressing, supporting them, how to navigate the system, what do you do in case of domestic violence, child abuse, how to prevent it. Right now, you can't put 10 people together, you know, with the COVID regulations. We have to be worried with masks. So people, they don't even want to go to any gathering. We are worried, they are worried. So COVID changed a lot of things. COVID changed program, COVID changed how we function, COVID changed how we have to be worried about keeping the safety of people.
Right.
So, but if you say education is a key, and ongoing education, not one time, like you go clean your house one time, you say it's clean, it's done. It's maintenance. You have to maintain it. You have to, you know, look for new things, how to clean it faster, it's education and prevention is like that, maintenance. So you have to be able. And to be honest, our offices are small. If we can get, we cannot get more than 8 people. You know, we used to have a big space that we lost.
Yeah.
And it just COVID changed a lot of things.
Yeah.
But domestic violence is something we need to, like, I know with the Afghan community, I say, let's just get there, do this prevention and intervention before they get there. We already have 2 families there. They took a kids from, you know, one almost new family, and they were in a process to take the other one. So I go and I talk to the community. I say, let's just do something before, you know, that become
good for you.
Just, yes.
Tell us a little bit more about your License to Freedom nonprofit, why you founded it, and what services you provide.
I founded that organization. It's to prevent, you know, to prevent this type of incident.
Yeah.
to be willing to meet the needs of refugee community when it comes to issues of domestic violence, sexual assault, and stalking, mm-hmm. to create a space for people to come to talk, to reflect, to be able to have the safe space. Even they don't want to address domestic violence, but they will feel there is a safe space for them. Once they're ready, they will come. This is how we came to, you know, create the license to freedom. It's just for people to come seek services, to get services that respectful with their culture, with their language, with their background, with their, you know, it just address all of the aspect that they will be looking for. Mm-hmm. And so that's why we are unique. We are the only organization to address the cultural and linguistic, to have the cultural and linguistic part.
Yeah,
I know actually, when the refugee community walk to our organization, I understand. She has issue, but she's not ready. So I know I came from that culture. I know that could be my mom or my sister or my cousin or anybody.
Yeah. And you yourself are from...
I'm from Iraq.
Iraq, right.
Yes, yeah, I'm Kurdish from Iraq. Yes.
Kurdish. If someone out there watching or listening to this today is experiencing domestic violence, where can they get help? Or is there a number they can call right now if someone wants or needs, is ready for help?
You know, anybody, I would just like to tell them that two things. You are not alone and it's not your fault. You are not alone, it's not your fault. If you find yourself in a domestic violence situation, you don't even have to mention your name. Call us 619-401-2800 or call our domestic violence advocate. We have Afghan domestic violence advocate, Iraqi domestic violence advocate. We speak Arabic, Farsi, Dari, and Russian. So 619-635-7332 or call 619-401-2800.
Very good. And what is the website for License to Freedom?
www.licensetofreedom.org. So we offer crisis intervention and we provide free legal services. We have three attorneys providing them with legal consultation. If you want to file restraining order, divorce, child support, child custody, or legal consultation, it's free. We don't have a waiting list. We have entrepreneur program, which we had 21 women graduated last year from our program. 21 women started their own small business last year. This year, the state extended this program, SEED program, for another 2 years. So we are going to help 20 Afghan women and 20 Arab women to start their small business here in San Diego.
That's so great.
We have youth program, big youth program. We support the youth how to achieve their goal, to apply for college, mm-hmm. to, if they have any struggle in their life, to come to our safe space to talk so we can support them achieving their goals. We have, of course, COVID-19. We've been working with COVID-19, mm-hmm. Trying to talk to people to get the vaccine, to get, you know, accurate information from our agency when it comes to COVID. And we also have one of biggest culturally and linguistically mental health program. We have 16 Excellent. Marriage family therapists at License to Freedom. They all bilinguals. They speak Arabic, Russian, Dari, Farsi, you mean it, Arabic, Kurdish, you mean it. So we provide in-home mental health services. We send the team, like, for example, for this family of the Syrian community who are in crisis, mm-hmm. we send 2 to 3 therapists home to help them, to provide them with what they need, to do expressive art therapy, to play with kids, to take them to mall. I don't know. Like, we have a unique mental health services. And our therapists, they all train in issues of trauma-informed care, not just the therapists, our team all, you know, it's just train very, very well how to deal with crisis, how to respond to need of survivor of domestic violence, how to offer empathy and sympathy. Not sympathy itself is not enough. Adding empathy, you know, to the sympathy, you know, and be able to talk to people, to walk in their shoes, to make sure that their need it's being met, make sure that we understand where they are coming from, understand the level of trauma, understand those people survive war, they cannot trust anybody, create this space to be able to trust us. So yes, start a good conversation. Yes, yes, Miriam.
Back to the Al-Rawi family. Is there anything that the public can do to help these children? Do they have any needs? You know, is there a site for donations or clothing or anything else for them? And, for that matter, and also to help other refugee families in need.
Right now, when I asked them yesterday, of course, a lot of people came. I've been called every day. People providing clothing, new shoes, like everything, food, gift card. People are so nice. And I just, this is San Diego.
Yeah, we have big hearts.
San Diego. Those people made me to be who I am. Believe me, when 22 years ago I came to this country, those people supported me to be who I am. San Diego people, those good people who picked for that left, you know, and they are wonderful. Those are matter. This is when I look at the San Diego, those are the people who matter that I always talk about them. Yesterday, I asked the kids, what do you need? We need peace. We need the media to stop blaming my dad, to stop talking about this guy from Syria. We want to go back to school, feel safe that nobody will bully us and point their finger. We need the media. We need people to leave us alone. And I think what those people need, they need peace.
Yeah.
Because they want to go back to their home. They need their neighbor, you know, as just to be more careful, to knock their door, to bring them soup and say, how can we be supportive?
Yes. You know,
they don't want anybody to ask them about the incident. They want peace. And you know what they told me? We even don't want anybody to talk about our dad because my dad is the hand of justice. And let's just the justice, you know, to find out if he killed a mom or not. Yeah. With the kids always say, we doubt even 0%. So this is their kids. They still love dad. They lost their mom and they don't want to lose their dad.
Yeah,
so
they're hoping the accusations aren't true. And what about for the other refugee families? They're not the only family here that's had struggles, certainly. If people want to help other newly arrived refugee families, what's the best way that someone out there can do that?
The best way is to knock their doors, to not be afraid to open conversation, to use the language of heart. Go, don't say, I don't speak Farsi or Dari. We human, we have different kind of connection. We can connect to each other. Knock their door, say, how can I help you? Those people, somebody called me from Fletcher Parkway. They say, there's a woman, she's about to die. She's so weak. We are afraid that she's dying.
Oh, my gosh.
I sent our crisis counselor. She talked to her. She's, of course, Afghan. This woman, she just got a baby. She was bleeding. And she has a infection on her teeth.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. She couldn't talk to anybody, you know. So she was crying because her hand was under her chin and she was, you know, going around the, you know, backyard and everything. Thought she's crazy. She wasn't crazy. She was somebody who arrived, who just delivered a baby. She was, you know, bleeding. And in addition, she has pain on her teeth.
So just listening, reaching out and listening to our neighbors.
Listen to people and say, how can I be, you know?
Yeah. Are there organizations where people want to donate to help the refugees with whatever their needs might be? If some woman like that needed dental care or somebody needs whatever it might be, you know, financial.
Transportation. If people can provide transportation. For example, this is what I say. I say, if people can donate their time once a week, 2 hours to take one family to the beach, to library, show them how beautiful San Diego, you know, show them the school, talk to them.
What a wonderful thing
program.
To do.
After school program with the kids or teach mom how to speak or how to, you know, just survivor English. They don't have to be fluent. Something, I think everybody can do that.
Yes.
Offer their time, you know, just to support. Those people going to be ending up here in San Diego.
Right. I know some of them,
our community, they will remember all their life when I came, because this is what I say. I say when I came, Annette Badger family supported me a lot. My goodness, every time away when I think about them, I just want to cry.
Yeah.
They used to come take me to their home having dinner because I was by myself.
Oh,
this family, every time when I say, resiliency, to me, resiliency was Annette Badger, who supported me all my life, and she made me to be who I am. And she says, you know what, Delquaz, you're on feet, you can do and go support others. So those people, they will remember that thing. They will remember somebody knocked their door, provide them with some soup,
yeah,
and help them. Yes.
I know, I remember a few years ago interviewing a lot of newly arrived refugees, and I specifically remember a woman who'd come from Africa, and she didn't know anything about San Diego. You know, they're placed here sometimes by an international placement agency or the UN. And she didn't know we had a beach. She didn't know she was living in San Diego within a couple miles of the ocean that she'd never seen before. And someone finally took her to see it. So you're right. Sometimes it's just the little things we can do.
A little thing can make a lot of change. You know, people who've been traumatized, people, especially like the Afghan community, you know, is mental health. That is therapy. When somebody will take them even once a month, because they have 7 kids, if 2 cars can, join 2 families, and you know what, they're very generous. They can make good food and Afghan rice and beef and salad. They're so generous. Like when we go visit them, they share whatever they have. You know, they open the fridge, they share, and they just run to the kitchen. They start to cook something. So generous, so generous.
Very good. Well, we are out of time for today. Is there any final thought, Delquaz, that you would like to leave with our audience today? And folks, if you just tuned in, we have been speaking with Delquaz Ahmed, the executive director of License to Freedom, which is an Alcohol-based nonprofit that helps refugee and immigrant families here in our region. Delquaz, I'll let you have the final word today on what you would like to leave with our viewers and listeners on the radio and viewers on East County Magazine.
Thank you. I'm thankful for everything. And I would like to just say, I'm thankful for the team who came together to support Alrawi's family's kids. I am so thankful for the Syrian community, for the host family who decided to take 9 kids. I'm thankful for the CPS. I'm thankful for the school district who step in and to, you know, see how they can help. I'm thankful for the community. I'm thankful for you, Miriam, who called me the day after to say what we can do for the kids. I'm thankful for everybody who tried to keep the peace for that family. I hope the media will slow down a little bit with the story and let the kids have some peace, especially they are grieving. It's time for them to focus on themselves, to grieve. They lost a beautiful young mom.
The police have not released the name of the mother, you know, who passed, the victim, but certainly if there are things that the family wants people to know about their mother and her life, or when, you know, when that name is released, we would certainly like to, you know, to do that. I mean, to include the good memories they must have of their mother, so there's something positive in the media.
Maybe later on the kids can talk to you, maybe.
Yeah, when they're ready.
Maybe
when
they are ready, they can talk about the beautiful memory. Because grief, it doesn't mean you cry. Grief, talking about the memory that will stay with them alive, all their life. So I think if we can leave them alone a little bit, have them have some peace, have the media slow down with blaming and pointing finger on everybody, I think that's what the kids need right now. And that's what
I agree with you.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you, Miriam. Please.
I want to thank you, Delquaz, for taking the time to come on for helping this family and so many families in need out there, and for taking the time to come on our show today on the East County Magazine show on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice.
Thank you very, very much. Thanks a lot, Miriam, and thanks for having me.